This is LabCast, insights and ideas for the expansion stage senior manager, hosted by OpenView Labs.
Hello and welcome to this edition of LabCast. I'm Kevin Kane, and today I'm joined by Jonathan Krantz to talk about some of his research into the top challenges facing high-tech marketers. For those of you who don't know Jonathan, he's the principal of and chief copywriter for Krantz Communications, a marketing communications and content creation firm here in the Boston area. Jonathan recently undertook some research independently to investigate the challenges high-tech marketers are facing, and we're really anxious to talk to him about it. Hey, Jonathan, thanks so much for joining me today. How's it going?
It's going great. It's a pleasure to be with you, Kevin. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, so the origins of this conversation that we're going to have today is really some research that you recently did talking to a variety of marketing folks in the high-tech industry. Can you give us a sense of what the background of that was? How did you conduct that research, and what exactly were you trying to find out?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. Well, Kevin, I would do exactly what you do at OpenView, which is to, before starting out in any kind of content initiative, is to do a little investigation and find out, what does this audience want to hear or want to learn, or what are they interested in? So for my own interest in developing content, I knew that I wanted to target enterprise-level high-tech marketers. And so I drew together a list based on, one, my clients, and number two, from LinkedIn. And I have to say, in the, 6-7 years I've been on LinkedIn, this is the first time I've actually found a use for it. I don't know, have you ever found use in LinkedIn for any of your investigations for content?
Well, it's certainly a great resource to see what people are talking about. I definitely use it in that capacity.
Well, it turned out to be a great thing. So through those two lists, I identified 26 likely people, sent out invitations, and miraculously, I managed to get 8 or 9 interviews, which is a really high conversion rate. And what's important to understand is I didn't come at them with a questionnaire. There were really just two open questions on my mind. One is I wanted to get their sense of what the segments are in high tech. But more importantly, I wanted to find out, well, what makes you sweat? What keeps you up at night? What are the unresolved marketing issues of greatest concern to you? Or another way of thinking about it, what would you like to know that would make you more effective, more powerful, a better marketer? And I left it open. So I didn't ask them pointed questions like, are you using content marketing? What are you doing with social media? Tell me about big data. I wanted it open to let them dictate the terms of the conversation.
So what kind of trends emerged from that conversation, if any? Did you see any patterns in the answers that you got?
Oh, yeah. And that's what's so interesting. And that's why I'm so glad I did leave it open, because patterns did emerge. And in fact, I saw really kind of 4 big overarching themes. The first one would be integration. And by integration, I not only mean integrating various, not just content, but various communications and marketing efforts, but even integrating marketing with sales, marketing with public relations, marketing with product development, et cetera. So as you can imagine, the bigger the enterprise, the bigger the issue this is.
Sure.
I'm sure you won't at all be surprised by the second big issue that came up was data measurement and ROI, which is everyone wonders, do they have enough information, the right kind of information, how are they measuring their success, and most importantly, for them, is how can they demonstrate that success to their colleagues or to the people they report to. The third one was a surprise to me. This issue of marketing automation came up very frequently. I hadn't anticipated that. And these are these platforms like Eloqua, and I never pronounce this correctly, but hopefully you know how it's pronounced, Marketo.
Yeah, I say Marketo.
People volunteered that, they have it and don't necessarily feel completely comfortable with it. And I thought that was very interesting. And then the fourth one, and this is something I think that's on everyone's minds, this push versus pull marketing, or, I think other people call it outbound versus inbound. And marketers in high tech are thinking about how they make that transition. So those are that is a transition from push to pull. So those are the big four.
So those are some interesting topics and pretty diverse. So why don't we spend a few minutes kind of breaking some of them down? I think the first one you mentioned was integration, and certainly that's not a new issue. I think we've heard a lot about sales and marketing integration over the last few years and integrating teams and all sorts of aspects. Why, in your opinion, do you think it's still such a big challenge?
Well, I'll take a cue from one of the people I interviewed. First of all, we're not all speaking the same language. I think one of the most interesting interviews I conducted, someone says, you know, the first thing we do is we go to the whiteboard and actually define our terms, because what you call a lead and what I call a lead may be two different things. So the first, there needs to be a clarity of what exactly we're talking about. We talk about a lead, a conversion, a sale. What are these things? So the first difficulty, especially in a large organization, is vocabulary. Are we all talking about the same thing, or is all the stuff getting obfuscated and confused because you know we're talking about two different things, even though it has allegedly the same English word in front of it? And then there's the traditional stuff, Kevin. You've heard this 1,000 times before. You know, alignment of interests, right? Among PR and the person responsible for SEO and the person responsible for social media and the person responsible for sales. Another big concern that came up among marketers is this anxiety about, well, how much influence do I really have in the decision? So there's this desire to look beyond the lead generation and the pass off the lead to look at the entire funnel and say, well, what is marketing's involvement with ultimately the end result, which is the sale and then the sustaining of the relationship with the customer? Another big one, when you talk about the difficulty and complexity of integration, is mergers and acquisitions, because obviously that's one of the major strategies for these large enterprise high-tech people is, you know, buying a company rather than developing a product. But when you do that, you know, not only is there the complexity of integrating the actual products and services, but how do you integrate these sales teams? How do you integrate the marketing? Suppose, for example, you pick up by acquisition a company with a famous brand name product. What do you market then? Are you going to market your overall umbrella brand, or are you going to market this sub brand, or are you going to do both? It's all very tricky.
Yeah, it sounds like it's really an issue in a lot of ways of communication and just knowledge gaps and people not really knowing how to communicate with each other and perhaps not being confident about what the other party's doing.
Yeah, my guess is that that's a lot of it. And I also think, too, look, you know, at the enterprise level, we're always talking about politics. I think it's about creating a culture of mutual confidence where people can trust each other and believe that it's in their mutual interest to collaborate and work together.
So then the next issue that you raised was this whole idea of data and measurement and return on investments. And, you know, it seems to me that a lot of that's really focused on people trying to get credit for what they do, which isn't always easy, admittedly. But, you know, do you really see that as an obstacle, or is that really more of a self-serving desire that these marketers are having?
I think they're profoundly interrelated, because if you think about it, let's take that self-serving portion where someone says, well, you know, gee, I want the numbers to assign us the appropriate credit. Well, it's not just self-serving, because, as you know, those numbers will often have a great impact on budgets. So if the work that you're doing doesn't get credit, you know, you risk losing budget. I mean, ultimately, you could risk losing your job. And you, even in a situation where you feel safe, you risk losing access to successful tactics that don't necessarily show results on the radar screen. So I give these people the benefit of the doubt. I don't think it's merely self-serving. I think there's a genuine concern that meaningful activities don't necessarily reveal themselves in the numbers. Let me give a couple examples, Kevin.
Sure.
One of the things that came up is simply quarterly reports. And the numbers come out every quarter, but as you know, you may do something, initiate something this November, but January. Well, where do you assign that then? Is it this last quarter of the year for 2012, or is that a first quarter in the year, you know, the calendar year of 2013? So that's a simple one, but here's a more complicated and kind of sophisticated example problem. One of the people I talked to said this. It says, look, you know, if I do an email blast, I know that I'll see lit in our banner ad click-throughs, even though these are not click-throughs directly from the email itself, right? So the numbers that come in for ROI will show how many times, you know, was the email open, was it viewed, does it click through, the links, et cetera. But what it won't show is the kind of psychological impact that the emails have. Someone may get an email, not act on it, but they see, they go to the web and they're surfing and they see a banner ad. Something about that email may inspire them to follow through on that banner ad. How do you track that? How do you get credit for it? Their superiors may be skeptical that this is happening, but first on the ground, they know, they can see that there's a boost in these other things.
Right.
That activity, even though that causal link is hard to demonstrate. So, you know, you can see where this anxiety opens up. I mean, think of it this way. It's like when we do public relations work, you know, we do speaking gigs, we do art. You know that it's awfully hard to measure the direct result of an article, the direct result of being present at an important conference. If you say, you know, Jonathan, what did you get out of going to Content Marketing World in September? It's like, well, you know, look, I didn't get anything per se right now. But I know that my presence at that event and others over time will be very profitable in terms of the relationships developed, et cetera, et cetera. Again, difficult to track and lead. And I think a lot of marketers out there would like to find either better ways of tracking and measuring performance and or creating a culture in their organizations where efforts don't immediately reveal numbers are still valued and appreciated.
No, that's great. I think you made some good points there. Why don't we move on to the next issue that your research surfaced, and that's marketing automation. And, you know, to me, I question how valid of a concern that is. I mean, to me, it seems like that's something that you put a lot of upfront effort into to get it set up, and then after that, you just enjoy long-term benefits. So as long as you're willing to make that trade-off, it shouldn't be a problem. What kind of information did you hear from the folks that you talked to?
Well, Kevin, you're right. That's the way it should be, right? You get this stuff. You make the investment in making it work, and hopefully you also make the investment in training so that people know how to use it. But that may be an overly idealized vision of the world. I think that what happens on the ground is organizations make the investment in the technology without making the comparable investment in training. As a consequence, what do people do? Well, they do like what I do with Microsoft Word. How much of Word's capabilities do I actually use? Probably about 5% of what it can really do is what I do every day with it. And I think something like that is happening with these marketing automation programs. People open up the dashboards and they use the two or three features or functions that they really understand. And then everything else becomes background noise that they ignore, even though, you know, down, they know, well, there might be some real potential if I leverage this stuff appropriately, but they're not leveraging the sophisticated stuff appropriately. And in fact, you know, one of the persons I interviewed said, you know, what happens is that instead of being a sophisticated platform that integrates marketing efforts and sets up a cascade of behaviors, triggers, new campaigns, further triggers, etc., it devolves into being simply the latest email promotion tool. So it ends up replacing something like Constant Contact or Outlook than being powerful marketing automation integration solution.
So do you think that issue really lies with the marketing automation solution provider or with the teams that are implementing them and just aren't doing so very effectively?
You know, I just don't know based on, you know, I didn't go into it deeply enough to know. I mean, my suspicion is that there needs to be work on both ends. What I think is going on is that, you know, it's like any other kind of sale. The sale's made and then goodbye. You know, it's in your hands. Good luck. And I think that if these marketing automation people were smart, they would say, you know, it's not enough. We've made the sale, but we've got to invest more in helping people leverage, get more value out of what they have. Because if we don't do that, what's going to happen is we're going to create a lot of ill will. And over time, people are going to start abandoning these features and functions. Whereas the alternative is if they're appropriately trained, they actually may buy further add-ons, et cetera, as they see increasing value from using the product in a more sophisticated way. So, yes, the marketing automation people have some responsibility. Some of the responsibility goes at marketers themselves for not, or at least the people who are in charge of the marketing departments for not investing their time and energy to learning more about how to use this. And some goes to the higher level management for simply buying it and then thinking it's a set it and forget it proposition, and it's not.
So one of the last issues that you talked about at the outset of this podcast was this whole idea of push versus pull marketing. And, you know, I think you can call it a lot of different things. You can call it inbound versus outbound marketing. You can call it content marketing to a certain extent, which is a subject very near and dear to both of our hearts, I know. Based on what you, the conversation that you had and the research that you did, you know, what's the real issue that marketers are facing here? Is that they just aren't on board with doing content marketing, inbound marketing, or is it they're struggling to do so effectively?
I think at the very least they're intrigued by it. I think many of them would like to be on board. I also suspect that many of them don't really understand what content marketing is. You know, they think it's just about creating stuff and putting it out there and not understanding that, no, content marketing is about managing the intersection of your prospect's interest and your expertise. And you're taking that crossover, that intersection, and you're filling it with meaningful materials that over time build confidence in you as an authority and expert in this field and builds a deeper bond between yourself and these prospects so that even without knowing it, they're actually marching down a sales funnel as they're reading, as they're consuming the content. Now, here's a couple things I heard from people. These are direct quotes. I mean, one of them says, challenge is not creating content, but how do we transition from outbound push to inbound pull? So from their point of view, yeah, sure, we know how to create a blog, we know how to make video, we know how to do ebooks and white papers, but that's not enough. It's about how do we get out of this mindset that we got to keep investing in print ads and direct and email blasts, and how do we get the buy-in and create a culture in which we recognize that by creating the right kinds of content and being aggressive in its effective distribution, we're creating a marketplace in which people will continually stream our way. And in fact, the best people, the most qualified. It requires a change in mindset, and it requires a change in the enterprise's behavior. Some of the difficulty, Kevin, I think, is just the complexity of the issue. You know, I heard in one interview someone say, you know, in the old days it was simple. There were three channels. You know, I had trade shows, I had trade magazines, print, you know, to advertise in, and I had direct mail, basically, and that was it.
Right.
Maybe some, right? But now you got those plus all the social media platforms, and there seems to be a new one every month, plus all this different kinds of content where, you know, it's the blog, it's the podcast, it's the video cast, it's the papers, et cetera. And there's this sense of being overwhelmed. And Kevin, as you know, as a marketer yourself, when people are overwhelmed, they go to their default response, which is to do nothing, right? And I think that we're seeing some of that psychology playing out here. There are just so many choices. People are wondering, well, where do I even start? How do I bring all this together? There is, however, recognition of how important it is to do this. Another direct quote I found from somebody, and I don't know where this person sourced it, but they said 93% of buying processes start with search. People want what they want when they want it. And I think that's an important observation. And it's really central to why you would do a content strategy in the first place. But again, what I see high-tech enterprises struggling with is how do you get out of that old mindset of push, push, push the message and into this new one where you're going to attract people to you because of the value people see in what you have to say and what you can offer them.
Jonathan, this has been really interesting. I really appreciate your time today. Can you let our listeners know not only how they can get in touch with you, but what you're going to do with all this great information that you've gathered?
Let's take the easy part first. So to get in touch with me, that's easy. I have a website, naturally. It's kranzcom.com. So that's kranzcom.com, kranzcom.com. And You can go through there. My email is also there. Be delighted to talk to you. The second part, what am I going to do with all this stuff? Well, I have a number of ideas. You know, one of them is to do my own podcast, and I have a couple other things I want to put together. I had a great conversation with Drew Davis a couple of weeks ago. He just wrote a new book called Brandscaping that I recommend to everyone, and I'm taking a few cues from that, thinking about, well, you know, who do I partner with to create a brandscape with content? So I've got a number of different ideas I'm pursuing.
That's great. Well, we look forward to seeing them come to fruition. Thanks again, Jonathan. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Kevin. It's been a great pleasure talking to you, and I hope it's the first of many opportunities.